Hello and welcome to The Plotting Shed. You're listening to Rachel McCarty, founder of plantplots.com and author of the book I Want to Like My Garden. Each week, The Plotting Shed discusses different aspects of garden design, but we focus on things that other books don't really talk about. I hope you enjoy this podcast, and do please hit the subscribe now button so you don't miss another episode. Well, hello and welcome back to The Plotting Shed. Now, this week's podcast episode, I thought I would challenge you to, rather than simply be a follower of trends, to set an example and pioneer the trends that I think we should all be following in gardens and with garden design this year. Maybe the Plotting Shed pioneers, one, you know, change the world one garden at a time, something like that anyway. But these are the areas that I think whatever you're doing in your garden this year, put these to the forefront of your mind because they will make a difference. And if we can change these trends, then we'll only be working in a positive way. So I'm going to set you up as being trend setters rather than followers. So you can go out and spread the word and tell your neighbours this is what you're doing and this is why you're doing it. And hopefully they may well cotton on as well. My first trend setting goal for this year is that my garden does no harm. And the way that I garden does no harm. What is the carbon footprint of what I am doing in my garden? If I, every time I fire up the lawnmower, every time I maybe fire up a power tool, I dig over the soil, I cut something down, I weed kill, how much harm am I doing to my microenvironment? Maybe even only a tiny perspective, how much harm am I doing to the macro environment? And so maybe I might challenge myself this year to say, okay, you mowed the lawn last week. Do you need to mow the lawn this week? What's the worst that could happen if I don't cut the grass this week? It will be one less use of the petrol mower, for example. So it's not saying that I'm doing no harm, because I think that's a really difficult thing for anybody to do. Maybe do less harm. Maybe evaluate your habits and think, should I really be doing this? Is there a better way? For me, I said last week, my paths have become quite weedy as a result of my no-mow May. And yes, last year I did spray weed killer on the paths, and has it been really effective? Actually, no. It did weed them and the weeds died back, but they grew straight back again. So all of this advertising talk about kills weeds down there and it keeps going all the way through just didn't bear fruit. What have I probably got to do is I've actually got to lift the block paving and get the weeds out from underneath it. It will be a more arduous task, but it will do least harm. And maybe that's the way I need to be refocusing my gardening habits this year. So that's the first one. Do least harm. And following on from that, there is now a trend which is all about no digging, the no dig vegetable garden, the no dig let's when we're not ploughing the fields anymore. And there's a very good reason behind that, which is the importance of the wood wide web. There is this whole network of millions of interlinking fungal fibres that join your plants together. And all of those add as an information superhighway, allowing the ecosystem to work really, really well. So every time you dig over the ground, you break up the filaments of this fungal network. It has to then regrow. it's almost like if we start digging, if you dig over the vegetable patch every single year, if you dig over your rose gardens every single year, you are breaking this network. It's a bit like the internet crashing in an entire town, for example. You know, imagine how we would feel if we couldn't actually access any information for 6 months until it was re-established. So how are you going to do that if you're not doing digging? Because people like to mulch and they like to add manure, and it says dig well in and dig the soil over and all these sorts of things. Well, yes, there is an element of digging that you can't avoid and you'll have to do, but minimize it. Do what is essential only. If you're adding mulch to a garden, add that in the late autumn and allow the worms to begin to take it over. They will break it down and bring it down underneath the ground. You don't need to turn everything over in order to get it into the soil. And what that will do is give your soil better soil health. If the soil is good, if it's healthy, and if the internet of information that it receives is intact, your plants will grow really well. Nature will be balanced. The ecosystem will be balanced. And if the plants go really well by themselves, it means you don't have to intervene to help them, which means less maintenance from your perspective. So I think just two thought processes. We all very easily just go in the garden and do something. I'll dig that up, I'll change that, I'll move this, without really considering the longer term impact, or just questioning how important is it that I do this. So those are my first two trends for you for this year. My third one is something that I've always felt has been an underused part of gardening. Whenever you go to garden centres, you are surrounded by beautiful plants and beautiful colours. So you are just overwhelmed by this array of variety and colour. And we're tempted to impulse buy all those lovely things that they've got on display. But in terms of the longevity and the benefit to your garden, especially for things like buying summer bedding, this sort of thing, and plants now are getting really, really expensive, let's face it, I think you need to be more bulb. Wherever you're planning and planting your garden, or changing the shape or the design or the layout of your gardens, I think buy a few select really good plants and shrubs that will add to the garden. But the spaces in between, I think if you just think more bulb, there are hundreds and hundreds of varieties of bulbs, and you can pack bulbs into small, small spaces in the ground. You will get this different display of really low maintenance flowering that comes up every year and multiplies by itself, which means your initial investment is quadrupled or quintupled over the next 3, 4, 5 years for free. I think bulbs are a really underutilized resource that you could add to your garden that would just give you so much more flowering time from maybe February right the way through till November. I recently have done a garden, and there was a couple of gardens that I've done where they've had raised borders at a sort of a very prominent part near the patio, and we've made a bulb theatre. So we've packed in lots and lots of differing bulbs into one small raised bed, so that at different times of the year, it's constantly changing. It's throwing up new flowers and new plants and things, which just gives you some interest. And because they'll naturalize and multiply free of charge all by themselves, you get a lot of bang for your buck. So be more bulb. If you remember a couple of podcast episodes ago, I talked about being a garden referee. And in terms of you setting the trends, for not only ways that it can benefit you, but benefit your garden, I think probably this is one of the most important, in that my attitude to how I garden has changed. I've forced it to change. And the change that I have made is that I don't classify weeds as being problems unless they become one. I have allowed a green underplanting of shrubs and things like this that was of the plants that were already there to grow. It's only if those plants are becoming too invasive or thuggish or growing and strangling some other plant or taking over another plant, do I get involved and just pull them out. So I'm refereeing their position in the sense that I'm allowing my cultivated garden to now coexist with the uncultivated part of the garden, and I'm just refereeing the relationship between the two. I don't mind that there are some dandelions. I do mind if the dandelions set seed and the seed blows over my patio, because I'll get dandelion seeds in the patio. So I will pull the flower head off before the seeds set. So I've refereed that. I haven't allowed it to happen. The bindweed that's now crawled up my iris and is bending the flower over, I'll break at the base so that my flower can do its thing without being strangled by a bindweed. But I'm not going to spend hours and hours and hours trying to dig every filament of bindweed root out, because I can't. It's embedded in the garden like it is in lots of spaces. So I'm just looking at refereeing with regard to bigger shrubs and plants and things like this, and plants that are growing on my fences. Are they in the way? Are they causing me a problem? Will they bring the fence down? Do I get whacked by a branch if I walk past it? Is that branch dead and needs to come off? Is this branch growing too far out over the road or is causing an obstruction? It's only that basis that is causing me to cut and prune the plant, rather than I must prune this every year because that's what the books say. That's what I mean about refereeing. This follows on, is that I now have this opinion that perfection isn't perfect. Perfection is actually a problem. Nature doesn't do perfect. None of us are perfect. There is no perfect thing in the world. Even the most fabulous diamonds sometimes have a tiny flaw. It is almost impossible to find perfection. But we strive for perfect lawns. We strive, we use that word for, you know, we want our flowers to look perfect, which means that they haven't got marks on them or spots on them or holes cut out where a leafcutter bee has taken part of the leaf for its nest, for example. It spoils the impression of perfection. But we're striving for something that doesn't exist and can't exist, which all that we're doing is adding a stress load to our garden psyche. It doesn't matter that there are leaf holes or viral spots or what have you. Particularly, the plants have survived for millennia with these viruses and viral spots. What you need to remember is that if you have those in your garden, it's because of the problems that your gardening technique may have caused for the plants, that they're now succumbing to those things. Nature will balance itself. It's our interference in nature that creates the imbalances. Aphids, for example. I used to grow roses and I used to have aphids on the roses. I used to walk around occasionally and I would spray the aphids with, sometimes initially while I was learning my gardening, I would spray them with an aphid spray to get rid of them. But they still kept coming back. I would then spray them with an organic soap solution, you know, use some washing up liquid, some organic washing up liquid to gum them. But the aphids still kept coming back. And then I would go out and I would squash them with my fingers, but the aphids still kept coming back. And then I stopped using any chemicals in the garden and I started to do this light approach to gardening and I started to just be a little bit less precious. And I haven't noticed aphids in my garden at all. Now, that's not to say that they're not there, but what I have is a lot more aphid predators in the garden. So I don't notice them because they're predated on by the natural environment. By trying or by taking that weight load of, I've got to get my garden looking gorgeous, mindset out of my head has actually allowed my garden to become more gorgeous because I'm not interfering in it. Nature will do it by itself, that's what I'm saying. So if you can just relax and chill down about things, give it time and everything will find a balance. So how can you help find a balance when you're choosing plants in the garden? I suppose this is my next trend. That I think is it's an easy one for you to remember and for people to remember when they're out doing things or buying plants or choosing plants. And I've got an 80-20 rule. 80% of the plants in my garden have to be good for wildlife in some aspect. They have to provide nesting sites. It has to provide a perching site partway across the garden for the little birds to land on so they can before they fly to the border. It has to produce nectar. It has to produce nectar at a time of the year where there's very little nectar. So 80% of the plants in my garden must be good for the wildlife in my area. And that then means that if I want to have the odd impulse purchase of a beautiful plant that I see that looks amazing and this, that, and the other, they form the other part of the 20%. But it means that there's enough in my garden to attract the wildlife and the ecosystem that I need to keep the garden healthy, and it allows me to be a bit indulgent with everything else. So 80-20, just ask yourself that question. 80% of the plants, go out in your garden today and really look and say, how are you benefiting wildlife? And you'll see whether you've got an 80-20 split. One of the areas of garden and garden design that hasn't really been spoken about as about a trend is nighttime lighting. I attended a landscaping show a couple of years ago, and there was a guy giving a lecture about lighting and the importance of lighting, but not for the garden, the importance of lighting for the environment. Now, we've all probably heard about the light pollution that we get and how much light we're giving off into space, but what we haven't really considered is how that light is affecting those animals that rely on the nighttime to come out and eat. Just as a very quick rule of thumb, there's nothing wrong with lighting your garden, but have the minimum amount of lighting to achieve the purpose you need to have. Question whether you need to illuminate the whole garden or when you switch those lights off. Darkness is good. Yeah, it's great. I love lights in garden. I adore lights in gardens. I wouldn't want the garden to be floodlit because then it becomes a very unnatural space. So as a garden trend, look at your lighting and think, is it just enough for me to do what I need to do or to achieve what I want to achieve, but no more? And secondly, consider the colour. Many nighttime animals navigate using all different sources. They use their hearing, they use eyesight, they use infrared, they use all sorts of things. The bluer end of the spectrum lights that you have in the garden are the most disruptive for nocturnal animals. So if you're going to leave lights on for longer, make them the redder, less intense colours, because that will interfere with the natural environment far, far, far less than the bright white spotlights that you have. And I think probably my last trend. I think, would you class any of these as trends? Well, I said trend setting, aren't we? We're trend setting. Is based on you and your relationship with your garden. And I see too many people who spend hours working and working to keep their gardens looking the way that they feel that they should. And I just think, you know what? Do less and enjoy more. And that's probably the best trend that we could all follow. I'll speak to you next week. Bye for now.
Well, thank you for listening. You have been listening to Rachel McCartain of The Plotting Shed. If you've got any questions about this podcast, please email me, rachel@plantplots.com, or you visit the website with loads of different information on garden design and gardening advice, along with planting plans that you can download. You can look at the designs that we've created. So do take a look, and please do hit the subscribe now button so you don't miss another episode. You can also donate if you go onto the website plantplots.com. There's a little button there saying you can buy me a coffee. So all donations will be hugely appreciated. Thank you very much. Enjoy your week, enjoy your garden, take care and stay well.